Bonjour et bienvenue to Crit Club, the podcast where four friends watch movies from the Criterion Channel streaming service that none of them have seen before. We have a doozy of a film this week with 1973's The Mother and the Whore, or La Mère et la...
Doozy.
Yeah, doozy.
In France.
La Mère et la Poutine by Jean Eustache, starring friend of the show Jean-Pierre Léaud, the lead actor from recent Crit Club pick, The 400 Blows.
And in also Irma Vep, we just realized.
Yeah.
That's right. He's also in Irma
Vep.
And
wasn't he also in Jane B? And no, maybe not.
I would be surprised if he wasn't. But.
Oh my God. He is a friend of the pod. In this film, Monsieur Léo plays Alexandre, a young Parisian man about town, itinerant writer, and professional scarf wearer, lounge litter asshole extraordinaire, as he strives to maintain multiple relationships post-sexual revolution, all the while nursing a broken heart, having lost his first love and first domestic abuse victim, Gilbert. He soon hooks up with an alcoholic nurse named Véronique, who becomes enamored of him despite showing more red flags than China. Lest we forget about Marie, the older woman who houses this lout for reasons beyond comprehension. But before we get too entangled with the ins and outs of Alexandre's love life, let's introduce our panel. I'm your host for the show, Angela. Mm-hmm. And with me, as always, is Peter.
Hello, I'm here. A doozy.
Wizard Chris.
Hello, it's me, Wizard. When you started, I was worried I missed the memo and the whole episode was going to be in French.
Oui, oui. Je suis désolé. Mon français, ce n'est pas très, très bien. Mais, also, we have Corey.
Hola. I'm Corey.
Nice.
Corey, is there a spine number for the selection?
I don't think so. I don't think it's gotten a Criterion release.
Oh. Yeah, I checked. I didn't see anything, and I knew if Corey didn't see it, then it must not exist. Il n'existe pas. Anywho, I chose this film because I didn't realize that it was over 3 hours long. and it represents a continuation of our forays into French New Wave cinema, and thought it might be a great way to look back at our more recent pick in the realm of the senses, which was also a French-produced, provocative, sexually driven 1970s film. I also chose it because it represents early portrayals of polyamory in cinema. So, Crit Club, were you enchanted with The Mother and the Whore, or were you disgusted or dégoûté by the rampantly casual sexism, misogyny, racism, and anti-Semitism? Is this a film that can be appreciated for being representational of its time, or should it be condemned because of just how wrong it is about intimacy, love, and relationships? Peter, what you thinking?
Oh, so surprise everyone, listeners and Crit Club alike. This one didn't do it for me.
Kelsey Breeze.
This one was a really
Pourquoi?
Hard one for me. And it's interesting because like I think because it's been a really crazy busy week of work, and so I had to split this up in various viewings, and so I don't feel like I was in a space where I would watch this movie like was comfortable to watch that, and so I can absolutely see myself in a different mindset and a different time of viewing having a different experience with it. I also am a little worried that if I were shown this movie 15 years ago, I would have loved it a lot. There's on the Wikipedia page of The Mother and the Whore, there's just this one sentence. And this one sentence is, after each tryst, Alexandre lectures the women on various topics while playing classical and pop music on his record player.
And he does that for 4 hours.
And that's this movie. But not in terms of the content. To me, this movie is kind of extremely representational of like, I don't know, fuckboyism.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
There's the fuckboy thing, but there's also just like this kind of deeply like oomphless skeptic, like navel gazy self-obsession that is not only present in the character, it's absolutely fucking present in the 3 hour and 40 minute runtime of this movie. There's just a real lack of sort of self-awareness and a self-obsession throughout the entire thing that I think really detracts from what I think. I also think it has a lot of very positive aspects. Like, I think a lot of the cinematography, a lot of the like acting, a lot of the moment to moment, like, is actually pretty interesting and fascinating up to a point, but it's something, Wizard, I think you said this actually about 400 Blows, about like having trouble connecting with a wayward dude who's misunderstood. And while I deeply loved 400 Blows, I felt that so hard in this fucking movie. And the whole thing just felt very much like a very self-obsessed dude lecturing women in a way that I think is
which
like,
they love, I hear.
Yeah. Oh boy, don't.
Well,
do
they apparently do in this movie.
Yeah, it's according to the fucking director writing about his own life. Like to me, I mean, like this movie is like in the the Kaiyedi cinema, like. Said it was the best movie of the 70s. Like, how many of those people who voted were men who saw themselves in this character? I think this is a movie that's like indicative of male film culture in general, and I think very problematic for me because of that. Those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Peter. I'm gonna go next to Corey.
Yeah, I don't know. I was a little warmer on this. Yeah, I wondered as I was watching this, how would I have felt about this when I was, 18, 19, 20 years old, if I would have watched it then, and I would have seen myself very much reflected in this movie. I mean, God, yeah. My teens and 20s, me and Peter sitting at Denny's smoking cigarettes and just talking and stuff. I mean, you replace the, cobblestone streets
play
of Paris. Play
a nudie photo hunt on those touchscreen bar games.
Yeah, and replace the cobblestone with asphalt and replace Paris with a Denny's. And I mean, this is basically my youth as well, even down to the whiskey drinking. And as I was watching this, I was also thinking in my mind, this is one of the weirdest movies that we've watched. And like, we've watched some profoundly weird movies on this podcast, but this is like almost like unintentionally weird in that this guy doesn't know how to make a movie, or he made exactly the movie that he wanted to make, or both of those things are true. And because there's so many just like, and like if this movie came out like today, I would hate it and I wouldn't want to sit through it. But because it's made in a certain, milieu, and it's like, part of the, 1970s in France and the French filmmaking style and all that stuff. Like, I don't know. I was kind of able to like go along with it. And like this movie is just like very stereotypically French. I mean, aside from the fact that I didn't see a beret in here, like I couldn't think of any more like, stereotypical French stuff to throw in here. The movie really hinges on finding the main character charming and or amusing. If you don't, then this is going to be a real big slog to get through. But if you can, like, sort of get with watching this character just sort of pontificate and talk, there's some, like, funny, clever stuff in here. Like, the movie, like, has this improvisational feel to it. But this was all apparently very tightly scripted. And, like, there's a lot of just, like, weird little clever stuff. I never really, like, laughed at it. But I don't know. I liked it. It's really hard to say. I think it would make a really good project for like a film student to like cut this down to 90 minutes and like see what you could do with it, because I think that there is a more conventional type movie here, but then I don't know, maybe you are here for just for the long languid scenes and all that stuff. And like, yeah, I mean, I guess we can be judgy about like the ways that they handle non-monogamy and the ways that they handle like race and politics and all that stuff. But it's also like, these are the characters. I don't think the movie's like glorifying their stances in any way. And I think that if there was no conflict in like how they were handling the non-monogamy and stuff, then there wouldn't even be any movie at all in there. So, I don't know. I think I have a lot more to say about this, but those are kind of my initial like thoughts on it.
Wizard, what are you thinking
about this doozy? Sorry, I'll stop.
I didn't connect with this so much. I agree that like I agree that the hinge of the film is, do I find like this character Alexandre's story, do I find his story compelling? Do I find him not compelling necessarily, because I did not find him compelling. I found him repugnant. But repugnance is a strong word, but you have to kind of like sign on to like a trip with this person. Because it is a 3.5 hour movie that is almost entirely people talking, mostly him. And at first I was like, I really hate this movie. The first maybe hour, I was like, I really hate this. But in the first hour, at the end of the first hour, the movie actually starts to pick up a bit. Like, mm-hmm. The love triangle aspect of the film doesn't even really get introduced until like maybe an hour, maybe 90 minutes into the movie. And that's a problem for me because, okay, this movie is an interesting achievement in, like, naturalism. There's some really mm-hmm. beautiful, mm-hmm. really, really beautiful shots. There are some really excellent performances, quote unquote. Like, these actors all do a really good job of, like, embodying these characters and saying the things that they say. It has this beautiful, like, natural quality. But I'm trapped in a room. I'm trapped in a room at a party with Alexandre, and he's talking about his girlfriends, and he's talking about pop music, and he's talking about the one scene that I thought was tremendously funny was the scene where they're all hanging out at the cafe and they're talking about the back of Jean-Paul Sartre's head.
Yeah, you're gonna have to be more specific. Okay, this is the Sartre one. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, oh yeah, the drunk comes in here. He's a, what do they say? They say he's a Maoist because he's obsessed with wine and they have like red flags or something. This is very funny. But it's just so much that, and it's so much uninteresting fluff for these like interesting scenes. And again, like, these are all like beautiful, natural, well acted scenes, but I just was not interested in this story even a little bit. And I think although I did have a huge crush on Veronica the entire time, mm-hmm. maybe you all felt the same way. I don't think this movie has an especially positive view of non-monogamy or like alternative sexual relationships. I mean, I realize that the movie is like the main character is like a director insert, and so this is his take on it, but like, or his experience with it. But I don't think the movie has any. I don't think the movie has anything very positive to say about sexual liberation or about unconventional relationships or that kind of thing. I think it's broadly speaking the story of a guy who tried it and was like, nah, I'm mostly in love with myself and and I hope I find someone who loves me as much as I do. But I think there's more to break down, and I think I'm being glib and simplistic. There's got to be more to a movie of this length and of this provenance or whatever, but we can hash that out.
I don't want to respond to so much of the stuff that you said, but I know we're still on first impressions, so
still on first impressions. Angela, what did you think of your pick?
Oh man, I did not hate this movie as much as I thought I would, because I mean the first couple of scenes, it's just so obvious how much Alexandre is a total asshole. But it sort of set up the scenario, like, why the heck are these women having sex with this guy? Like, what is the allure? And I spent, like, and let me just tell you, as someone who dates men regularly, frequently, that there's still this bullshit that comes out all the time from the same stuff from 1970. So for me, this is like a historical, archaeological dig of how men behave and why I might be attracted to aloof, emotionally unavailable people who are incapable of giving me the things I need. So basically I just enjoyed this as almost like a therapy session of curiosity. And I just found it, even though I absolutely hated Alexandre, especially like when we find out mid movie that, he and this beautiful girl that he tries to convince to marry him in the first part of the movie, like she's gorgeous and innocent and sweet. And you actually cheer for her when she gets out, when she kind of finally gets away from him. Mm-hmm. And you find out that they got in such a bad fight, like she was beat up. And was pregnant and had an abortion. I don't know. I was along for this naturalistic ride. Where was this going to take me? But I also completely understand where Peter is coming from, because you have to be in, I think, the right mindset to enjoy this movie. I think it asks a lot of questions about, like, archetypes of women, like this mother figure versus the Veronique figure. But I wish that it wasn't named like the mother and the whore. Like,
I was going to have a conversation about the title. Yeah.
Named
the
like
fucking male gaze of this fucking movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't have been the rake? What exactly made Alexandra so great in bed? Like, any evidence that we got in this film was negligible and not impressive.
It's the director's fantasy. I just fucking, it makes me so mad because it's just the director's fantasy.
I don't know. Like, maybe I'm giving the director too much benefit of the doubt here, but I felt like the portrayal was almost a caricature. And that's a big question. I pose it to you all. Like, was this a caricature, or do you really think that that this director thinks that highly of himself and thinks that beating up women is okay, and that women who commit abortion are murderesses? So I don't know. I found it fascinating to watch, and it's interesting because I watched in two sections. I did the first hour one night, and then the next night I was only going to do another hour, but I couldn't stop watching it.
It does pick up in the second. Yeah,
I was like waiting for the last episode of Shogun to come on at 9 o'clock, and I looked at my watch at like 9:30, and I was like, oh shit, I want to see what happens at the end of this. So to me, that suggests that, you know, there's something to this movie. Yeah. I think that I don't know that it's the best movie of the 1970s, but I think it has a lot to offer in terms of cinematic critique, also in understanding interpersonal relationships in the 1970s. Like, I think we've kind of come a long way in the last 40 or 50 years, and I'm honestly not surprised at the attitudes that are portrayed in this movie so casually and cavalierly. Because I still see remnants of those attitudes in my everyday life. And so in some ways, witnessing the more extreme ends of this was in some way affirming. Because I'm like, well, at least it's not that bad, right?
And so, I mean, like, to me, it's like, I see enough of this, and I don't care to see more, and I don't care. Like, I guess that's why I didn't connect with it. It was just because, like, I've seen so many tortured, self-obsessed men who get laid all the time and never get as much love as they want. I don't give a shit.
I don't need likable people in a story to keep me interested.
I don't either.
Like,
definitely don't either.
Some of my favorite stuff is where everyone in the movie is just a horrible person. So it's not like I was like watching this and being like, I don't agree with this guy, and therefore I'm not going to enjoy it. Like, I was like, I don't know. I found myself kind of just. And it's weird because this is not the kind of a movie that I would like, and I would imagine,
yeah,
like, if I would have guessed that I would have like, I think what I like about it is I do have a soft spot in my heart for like, amateur lo-fi. I'm just going to make art just because I want to make art. And I like that sort of initial, you know, those early works where people are stumbling around and figuring it out. And that's what this feels like. This feels, you know, it has a feel of like, just a group of people who wanted to make a movie and stuff, you know, led by this, you know, one guy. And I don't know. I find stuff like that overall pretty charming. So, yeah.
Yeah. I have to always have to check myself because I definitely do see some of my early 20s in this guy of just like, you know, and I've
gotten
there, you know, and so like part of it is just me like
self-cringing.
I don't want to like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, me too.
In that, you know, in that way. And like, I don't connect. I don't want to connect with, like, you know, I was nowhere near as aimless, but yeah, you know me, Corey. I was that.
Yeah, sure. I was too. And like, yeah, I wondered too, is like, what would my impression have been if I saw this when I was in my 20s? Because I'm watching this guy now and I'm like, how does this guy even survive? Like, he just doesn't, he just leeches off this like woman, I guess,
France,
or whatever.
Baby.
But like, yeah, he always has money for cigarettes.
Sexual hobo.
Though.
It's a way to roll.
But like, yeah, I don't know. It's a weird movie. I don't have these like, yeah, I have these various conflicting emotions about it because it's too long. It's too much.
So fucking long.
Like there are some scenes.
The whole first hour, you could axe the whole first hour, and
so self-obsessed.
And there are some scenes that go on for way longer than are traditional that really worked. Like the scene where Marie is at the end, where she's like, she plays an entire song about like lovers in Paris and stuff. And it's just mm-hmm. a still shot of her. They play the entire song. And like halfway through it, she just like puts her hands up to her face. I loved that scene. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And I'm like, it's the third or fourth time in this movie where they've just sat and played an entire song, which is not a normal thing you see
true.
In a movie.
That's true.
But that one really worked for me. But there's so much of this that just, we did not.
I am kind of shocked, Corey, because you hate these slice of life kind of movies, right?
This
I was Summer expecting hours. Kind of like that that you wouldn't necessarily like it. And I, of course, love these long, drawn out, naturalistic scenes where you almost get a sense of being in the room with these people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, for me, the payoff was like, if I thought of it less of a movie and me just sort of hanging around these people, though, like I would have really wished for some autonomy and be able to like walk away and come back later to it. But no, I loved how like it felt real to me that person, Marie, feeling kind of just exhausted and annoyed, especially like all those scenes whenever Veronique kept calling while they're in bed. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, I'm just going to come mm-hmm. over. And I'm like, that like, fuck you. That would, if you came to my house, I would be calling the cops. You better get the fuck out of my house. No the hell way. I'm sleeping. Sleep is sacred. I just feel like all these characters kept allowing this bad behavior and had like zero boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's something that we have learned over time since the 1970s is how better to assert needs. Because there was not like, there was just a lot of like crossing over and, you know, being in people's spaces without really a lot of consent, and also in people's physical spaces. Yeah, that was really uncomfortable.
If I can bring up the shout.
Because
it's been a few episodes since I brought the shout. But no, I think about, like, because Angela, both you and Corey in watching the shout, and I think in The Hour of the Wolf, talked about, like, why don't they just ask these people to leave? Mm-hmm. Like, why don't they just ask this entity, this, like, embodiment of this chaos to just kind of leave? And I guess maybe that wasn't my exact, I'm just annoyed that I didn't like it more. This is exactly my cup of tea. In terms of like the style of it, I love long movies where not much happens and you just sit in that space. Unfortunately, I did not want to sit in the space, in this particular space. It was a hangout movie. And I was like, towards the beginning, I was actually like, I kind of enjoyed the movie because it felt like, oh, this is cool. We're just hanging out. This is just Fast Times at Ridgemont High without anything exciting happening.
I described it as something like Waking Life, but only about relationships and like zero, like not to say like no like visual interest or anything like that, but like obviously a wildly different aesthetic. But I'm like, it's a two people enter a room and have a conversation, end scene, next scene, same deal. Let's do it again. Let's roll it again.
Yeah.
And some of the conversations are like, I just like our protagonist was born with some amount of brains and no self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And why do I want to hear that person talk about anything, you know, is like, why? Why you, dude?
Yeah, but to me it was amusing, like seeing the bullshit that was coming out of his mouth. I mean, like, he does at least at the very end get called pretentious. I forget which one of them calls him that. I'm like, I'm glad
which
they at least
France is fighting words.
Yeah,
the bar is quite high.
It's true. I'm just glad that someone said that word. But like, I don't know, it's just like weird. Like, he has this whole thing about like how people don't like drink lemonade anymore, and like there was like something about like. He likes imitators because imitators are better than the original because they don't have any of the baggage. And I'm just like, that's a weird thought. Like, I don't know. Or just these silly, stupid things. I feel like, yeah, like the director probably just like walked around with like a notebook and was just like writing all the stupid random shit that was going into his head. And there was enough to fill up almost 4 hours worth of screen time with it. So
get an editor.
I did like when Veronique said that Alexandra's penis was like a teapot.
Oh, like a teapot. Spigot. It's like the spout of a teapot. Yeah.
Oh my God. Because I was kind
Show
of.
Show it, you cowards.
Right?
Yeah, right.
I was waiting for this. And this is why I question whether or not this director is as self-obsessed as we think he is, because I don't think a self-obsessed director would actually allow the criticism of that character that happens later in the film. And I found that like so satisfying that some of these truths, you know, these things that are happening at the same time, like you can be fucking someone and still kind of hate their guts and also find them pretentious and annoying. And for her to also say those things was kind of like, I don't see that in cinema enough. I would love to.
I respect what you're saying. I disagree so much. Like this entire movie is this entire movie to me was about this main character's pain and self-inflicted or otherwise, being misunderstood or otherwise. And like the whole thing is, and everyone is used to that effect. Like I briefly was kind of thinking of my thoughts on the anger that I felt about Barefoot Contessa, where like that entire character was used to express men's pain, and how much I really disliked that, the entire basis of the whole movie. And so I felt the same way with this, where like, and it was more nuanced than Barefoot Contessa, definitely. But this definitely still felt like everyone is just a different sort of flavor to understand either the self-inflicted or not misunderstood or pain that this man is feeling.
See, I wasn't, when she was saying all those horrible things, I wasn't thinking about his pain. Fuck that guy. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about her own liberation in that way, despite the fact that she was super drunk and still also like she's kind of a mess herself. You know, to me it's more about like the unexamined life of youth, right? The things that we do and try how we try to connect with each other intimately in those unexperienced years, right? The things that we think are intimacy that just truly actually isn't at all.
I definitely get that,
but I agree with you. Like I totally understand where you're coming from at this. I get a sense, I think, of your anger that this is kind of how it's portrayed, and I wasn't as angry at this, I don't know, just because I was just so curious at how this was all being portrayed in the 1970s.
And like y'all, like stop me if I'm being too reductive. This just felt to me like this is why all of the memes and tropes about film bros, like this movie is precisely exactly why.
This is exactly what I thought we were going to be watching when we started Crit Club oh so many years ago.
Yep.
Like,
and you exactly loved it. You loved it. Peter, I hear what you're saying. I found the movie enjoyable. I liked the moments when the three of them are together and the two of them are kind of like ganging up on Alexandra. Yeah. I liked those moments. Because he's a character who needs to be put in his place and told like you're a fucking ridiculous human. You're a goofball, dude. But so much, I think, because so much feels like it springs from this director, that like even the parts where he's like taking shit from other people feels like very public, like self-flagellation. Like, look, I've learned. This is me learning. I'm still toxic, but I'm learning.
What a piece of shit I am. Yeah, it's Bukowski stuff. Yeah, it's all great.
Yeah. And I don't know. It just landed so flat, I guess. I feel slightly disappointed by that as well, that it just landed so flat for me. And maybe, you know, I'm warming to the notion that my problem with these films has something to do with me. It has something to do with how I was in my 20s. Did I have a scarf budget? No. But did I wear a pea coat and mansplain film to people? I'm sure I did. And I kind of wish now that I hadn't. But like, so I feel that some of my resistance here is recognizing something in a past self that I don't like. But I also just, I mean, it means I don't have patience for this stuff. It means I don't have patience for this kind of like navel-gazy thing, this kind of navel-gazy thing where like young men who don't know anything talk politics and relationships. And I'm like, your relationships are terrible. You're a terrible relationship. You don't know anything about relationships. All your relationships are awful. What is this?
And I wonder if the enjoyment, like among us, the varying levels of enjoyment of it are anywhere based on if we see this, you know, stand-in. I mean, this is semi-autobiographical, but if we ever see how that character is being portrayed, is that character being portrayed in a positive light or is that character being portrayed in a negative light? And I think it seems like if you think that this is like a movie like glorifying that character, then you're not going to like it because you're just going to think it's like pretentious and navel-gazing and all stuff. I didn't necessarily think it was a positive light. I thought that they were showing like, you know, the consequences of his actions, and he was, you know, causing conflict, and like he was taken down a peg a couple of times, and so it's like this isn't like
seriously can you how seriously can you take this guy with the scarves he was wearing?
I think there's a big difference between like a writer director being like, look at this, kind of
I think
me.
He was making
look how cool
fun of himself some,
but I. To me, it's just attention. To me, this is like, I supremely disagree that this is not a self-obsessed writer-director, like, simply because it's 3 hours and 40 fucking minutes.
I know.
Like, simply because of, like, stare at me, stare at my avatar, watch my avatar, look how fucked up I am, look how hot I am, look, yeah.
It is worth noting that he did cast his ex-girlfriend in the role of Veronica, like part of the movie is him dealing with his relationship with this woman that he has cast in the movie as his girlfriend.
That sounds like the worst thing ever.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I didn't hate this movie. I'm not angry about it. Yeah, I'm just more disappointed that I didn't like it more. Like I don't know. I definitely didn't hate this movie.
Did anybody see his little buddy that he goes and hangs out of the cafe with and was reminded of his friend in the 400 Blows? Like, I double checked to see if it might have been the same actor. It is not. It is another film director who, in fact, died of suicide, I think, at age 42.
Yeah.
Wait, I thought that was this director.
This director did also die of suicide.
At 42.
Oh, maybe I've got my directors all mixed up. But yes, you're right. This director did end up killing himself. So I guess, wow, now that I think about that, maybe this was a very self-obsessed person. Ooh.
That is completely my opinion. That is 1,000% my opinion about it. But that's fine too. But that's okay. I also don't think there's like any problem with that. Like, okay, hey, I've mentioned it a couple times in this movie. The movie Mother. Darren Aronofsky's Mother. Like, I think is a very flawed movie. I also paid to see it 3 times in the fucking theater. That is an extremely self-obsessed movie, but also a great ride. Let's go, Darren. And so, like, I don't think that there's any problem. I mean, like, every director, writer, whatever is self-obsessed in some way or whatever, like, wants some sort of, I mean, not every, but, you know, the vast majority of them. It's just, like, this particular... Yeah, whatever. I've said my piece enough. I'm talking too much.
Okay, but now we can play a game because there was another Crit Club movie title that was mentioned in this movie that we have not yet discussed, and I want to know if you can guess what it is.
I'm looking through our spreadsheet of record right now, listeners, which you can see in your show notes.
It's probably French, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It have to be French. I don't know. I don't know. This
probably
is,
Black
this is dangerous.
Moon. Just kidding. Cleo.
It's dangerous with
Cleo.
It was Cleo.
I'm so surprised you did not pick up
I
on
did
it.
Not, yeah, I didn't pick up on it.
Was it a Vagabond reference?
Yes, there it is.
Wow.
What? Yeah.
Wow. There was a
Vagabond.
Wait,
but Vagabond came out in the
80s. Vagabond.
No, yeah, no, Vagabond it wasn't an actual reference, but they talk about like being a vagabond, and I was like, oh, Peter doesn't pick up
they
on that.
Do.
Of course they do.
I saw some faces. What do we think about the sexual politics of this movie?
Yeah. So I have a theory that, there's tons of cheating in the world, and there's like this idea that, you know, humans are a monogamous, you know, species or whatever. The sort of data does not bear that out, at least in aggregate. And there's, you know, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people where the human impulse is to not just have sex with one person and stuff. And I feel like culturally in America, like, cheating is like bad, and that will like end a relationship, and that will end a marriage and all that stuff. Whereas the stereotypical understanding of the French, you know, sort of dealing with that is that, yeah, this is just going to happen, and you're going to have, like, you know, people on the side and all that. And so this seemed like there's so many books and stuff now. There's podcasts and movies and even, like, you know, representation about, like, ethical non-monogamy and stuff, you know, now that's available, which I don't think there was definitely not nearly as much in the 70s. So I feel like we see this, like, this is like in this in-between period where it's like there is this long history of, you know, fringe cheating being a sort of open secret, but we're sort of past the, you know, would you say the love revolution or whatever.
Sexual revolution.
That's the word.
Sexual revolution.
So we're past that, but now we're like trying to actually like figure out, okay, how does that work? How do we bring this stuff into light? You know, it's, you know, we're only a couple years past, you know, the sexual revolution and stuff. How do we actually do it where we can like start communicating about it? And it's rough. Like it's really, really, you know, rough. And it's like trying to turn some gears that aren't well oiled and stuff. And so there's just like all these like snippets and fights and all that stuff. But yeah, it's almost like this like proto-ethical non-monogamy that's being sort of shown here, and I don't know.
See, what makes me wonder at this movie and take it a little more seriously is that I think someone trying with an actual agenda would try to make that whole ethical non-monogamy actually look fun. I feel like none of the sex or the actual relationship between the three people looks like fun. Like, there's constant conflict. There is constant disappointment. You know, someone said earlier that, you know, that this didn't seem to have a positive opinion of the arrangement. And so in terms of actual sexual politics, it just is interesting to me because, I mean, I think part of the start of the sexual revolution is the widespread availability of the pill. And then on top of that, access to abortion in France. So, you know, suddenly women have a little bit more freedom. And it's just sort of interesting to me to see it overtly played out in French cinema in ways that maybe I don't know that it existed in American cinema at all.
You know, we don't talk as much. Like, we rarely mention Sunday Bloody Sunday. I don't know if y'all remember that movie that we watched.
Oh, man, that was a
like,
good one.
Oh, yeah. It was like 1971. Mm-hmm. It was, like, I'm looking now, it was that movie. And, like, I think we all agreed that was, like, a surprisingly progressive and sympathetic understanding of polyamory. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I forgot about that one. And I picked it. Was it was an Angela pick.
Yeah, that was a sweet movie.
Another dissertation on fuckboys.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Very much, yeah. Very much a fuckboy protagonist. I just think it's interesting. Like, I found that, like, I really did find this movie, I did come away with this with a kind of, like, conservative vibe about relationships. Like the whole conversation about how women want to fuck their abortionists, I found to be, like churlish, for starters. But also, like, if we're, like, I don't know, that seems like that's, you know, the problem with an edgelord protagonist is you don't know that this is the problem we're having is, like, are you saying shit just to get shit out there because the sound of your voice is so seductive to you? Or do you really believe the things you're saying? And the problem with, like, a film like this where with a director insert character is, like,
both.
What do you believe, dude? Like, what are you trying to say? He writes this speech for Veronica at the end that is, like weirdly anti-free love. Like, she's like, I've been fucked a bunch, it didn't mean anything, the only reason to have sex is if it means something. I'm like, that's like your grandmother talking, like. And I realized that her experiences of the sort of free love her experience has not been overly positive. And so I can see how like she comes away from this experience being like, well, that kind of sucked. Maybe this is not for me. Maybe I have negative attachments towards sex or different attachments or disordered attachments or whatever. I just like, you know, to write this for a woman, I was like, I don't know, man.
I thought it was more she the only reason to be in love was to make a baby. Like, just having sex with anybody is fine and everyone should do that as much as they want. But the only reason to ever fall in love was if you wanted to make a baby. That's what I thought her thing was
I thought she said, you know, there's something so special about watching people who actually love each other have sex. Like, there was again, this could be her relating her experience, but I felt so much like, I tried this. I didn't like it. I don't think we're supposed to do this, which is, you know, a lot of people walk out of non-monogamy with that take. It's not a great take, but it's like a unique one it's not a unique one, I should say. And so I just don't know. And because we have our edgelord protagonist who believes nothing and everything all at once, I don't know what this director thinks about relationships. I don't even really know what he thinks about his relationships that he's trying to talk to us about through this movie.
Yeah, because let's talk. What do you think about the last shot? I mean, that's where we would get the sort of wrap up of what we think about him, like where he's sitting here while Veronica's puking in a basin and he just kind of slumps down and gives this little smirk.
Because she's pregnant.
Yeah.
That is like...
Because she's pregnant.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, she's pregnant drunk.
I actually really liked her speech. I wanted to hear her actual emotions because most of the time, mm-hmm. Alexandra's talking.
Yeah,
right?
I was like, and finally, he's giving.
God, yeah.
Finally, like I wanted to hear all of her reactions and some of which seemed contradictory, and I thought it was refreshing. But realizing also that these might have been the words of the director, it makes me discount it a little bit. But I just thought that it juxtaposed with the following scenes where she is puking and she's also telling Alexandra to fuck off, but he keeps persisting, mm-hmm. which drives me up the wall. Like, there's no respect for people's boundaries or space, and there's no actual like consequences for breaking those boundaries, which to me suggests mm-hmm. that there was no framework in that time really for people to assert themselves in that way and for people to stick to those things, that there were legit guys at that time who would just persist and you have nothing to do but just to take it, right? So I don't know, I just found everything that she said in that moment to be incredibly raw, and how she was naturally crying through that entire speech, and she had memorized that speech. That was a long ass speech, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. right? I thought that was an incredible performance. I thought it was a perfect ending that she gets pregnant, because it kind of took me back to the 400 blows, because you know how like it's all about this child who's being raised by parents who didn't really want him. Like I kind of thought, wow, this baby is going to be raised in a really fucked up atmosphere. So yeah, I guess this is a movie that people maybe don't love so much, but I found it fascinating.
No, I mean, most of the stuff that I loved and most of the stuff that I think I'm going to remember about this movie are in the second half of the movie. I think once the triangle actually gets started, and once, I don't know, there's like a scene where they're like on the bed together and like the two women are like talking and he like tries to butt in and she's like, hey, you can have something with each of us. We get to have our own thing too. And stuff like that. I don't know.
That was great. Yeah, that was a great scene.
And,
Yeah.
And then it just like all that stuff, just seeing how they are sort of working around each other and then working with each other and stuff. Like, I don't know. It starts to get
also
to actually be a movie at that point.
So much working against each other. Another scene I enjoyed was where Alexandra and Veronica are having sex in the bed while Marie is there. Marie keeps trying to like caress Alexandra's back.
Yeah.
And Veronica keeps like slapping her hand away. And it's like very natural, very like like deliberate, obviously, but like there was just something about like her like firmly and continually like just pushing her hand off. I'm like, there's no way, like, this relationship cannot work. None of these, you're all terrible relationships.
Yeah.
Like, Alexandra's an asshole. Marie and Alexandra only seem to get along like like they use fighting as a pretext for sex, which is a terrible pretext for sex. And Veronica is, I don't know.
She seems unhappy. I mean, she like for as much as, you know, she enjoys like her life and is sort of liberated and unabashed about how she is, she doesn't seem like a happy person. I don't think anyone in this movie is going to be happy or whatever.
And I'm suspicious of films where like the sort of like liberated, like sexually, sexually liberated, like progressive woman is unhappy. It's the same problem I have with Forrest Gump, which is one of my least favorite movies.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a bad movie. It's just
I have really serious issues with movies that like paint like progressive sexuality as like only miserable, only miserable most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And in a movie like this, where one of the characters in this triangle is like loudly and tearfully, like seeming to regret the decisions that she's made to like get her here, like that rings true. But also, again, given that so much of this movie is this one man's voice, I can't help. I feel weird about him speaking for women in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the sexual politics of the film kind of squig me out a little bit, I guess. But I could be wrong, because...
Oh, no, they're squiggy. They're squiggy as fuck. Like, there's the consent in this does not exist. There's no, like, checking in with people. Or if there is, it's very minimal. Mm-hmm. There's no...
I thought the tampon scene was maybe longer than it needed to be.
See, I could have used more stuff like that. Like, that's a memorable scene that, like, I don't know, I've never seen before in a film. Like, I thought that was...
No.
I liked that.
I think what
it was a bit unrealistic, personally, but I don't know. It's at least something that popped out.
Yeah. Ah, you kind of, like, got a little literal there,
Corey.
What
you did there.
Yeah.
I got a what? Oh,
literal.
Sorry.
We're doing great.
Peter, you're awfully quiet. I think you might be done talking.
Are you just over talking about it?
Oh, I mean, I'm listening. I felt bad because I weighed in so much at the beginning.
No, not at all.
I will say did you want to? Do you have something?
Yeah, but if you got more to say, then go.
I was just gonna say, like, with all the sex that's in this movie, this is not a sexy movie. Sex is languid and slow and dull, and like, even though she says, you know, Veronica says that Alexander's just made her orgasm so many times, you never see it. You never see any of that stuff.
The fucking director writing his own fucking ticket, man.
But this is what makes me think that he's not trying to show himself in a necessarily great light, because it's not showing any of that. Like, you don't believe it. You don't believe any of this stuff.
Maybe he's not a great writer
either. But showing yourself in a negative showing yourself in a negative light does not equal I am not like desperate for people to tell me what a good boy I am.
Mm.
Like, if anything, it's please tell me what a good boy I am. Just look, I've learned stuff about relationships, I swear. I
keep coming back
too
to
many
the
scarves.
I keep coming back to the 3 hours and 40 minutes. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't need to be that.
That's insane. Like, I don't mind. Has anyone seen Wim Wenders' Wings of Desire?
No.
3 hours and 40. Oh man, that is a fucking great black and white German movie with lots of just random speeches about love and life. But also, it has Peter Falk playing himself, also playing an angel. That is an excellent movie. Like, Wings of Desire is a classic of Wim Wenders. But I guess what I'm saying is that, like, these sort of, like, meditative, beautiful, sort of, like, sweeping things, I don't mind if they're long. Like, but you, I guess as a professional editor for the past 12 years, 13 years, like, you can tell when something needs edited. Mm-hmm. And like, this just absolutely needed editing in a way where it's, I think, much crazily to the detraction of all it. I was looking up and it was on one of the Wikipedia pages for this, saw that Jim Jarmusch was a big fan of Eustache. And his movies. And I was thinking about, like, how, like, close Jim Jarmusch movies are to sort of this vibe. And how much I kind of fucking love Jim Jarmusch. Like, Crit Club, if you will think back to our unrecorded episode zero,
where we watched
Think Back
Down by Law. We watched 1986's Down by Law. And I don't know, like,
Tom Waits.
Yeah. But I think about like a lot of I think he Jim Jarmusch. I'm reading that he dedicated his 2005 movie Broken Flowers to this, and I've seen Broken Flowers. Like these are very good, solid movies that also are edited. I don't know. There's just a way of doing this that doesn't make it seem so interminable.
I agree with you. Like it's too flippin' long. However, I think it's intentionally like none of the things that could actually bring visual pleasure. You know, like the gaze, I don't feel like you get it in this movie. Like he is not offering you visual pleasure. He is offering you like the pleasure of sitting in a room with a person and listening intentionally to a record. Right. That to me is the like the most appealing.
No, but I love that. No, that's Jim Jarmusch as well. Yeah.
But my point is that I don't think you're meant to actually like these characters or look up to them. And I don't know that a director that isn't self-aware would be able to write that movie.
No, I mean, like, again, I don't have to like characters. I don't have to do it. Like, it's just more about, I mean, because Pauline Kael, what was that? There was the Cassavetes. There's like Cassavetes comparisons to this movie. And I really love those. I mean, like, I just really like so many other movies like this. I'm still just annoyed that I didn't connect with it more.
I'm curious what Ms. Kael does say about this movie. Do you have that available by chance? She did.
Keep talking. I'm going to go grab the book.
I knew, I thought you wouldn't mind that because I know in the past we've referred to Pauline Kael because she is, you know.
That's Pauline Kael, what she thought.
I mean, you know,
what did Pauline think? Yeah.
I think some of the. I'm trying to see if like how much of a stand-in this is for him, like I'm putting this up with the like Neil Breen litmus test because like Neil Breen writes every movie where he is the main character and he is going to be glorified and is so pretentious and blah blah blah, and like that's not the vibe of this movie.
But it's like self-flagellation though. It's like attention.
I think you guys are falling for one of the classic tricks of a self-obsessed person where they pretend where they acknowledge that they're self-obsessed but still make you watch them.
Yeah. Eyes on me while I call myself a piece of shit.
And then eventually someone will be like, "Oh, you're not a piece of shit."
I mean, like every comedian.
My what else you watching?
Yeah.
My what else you watching is going to like segue so well into this conversation.
Interesting.
Here, I'll just read because it's Pauline Kael's from The New Yorker, so it's short.
Thank you.
This controversial 3-hour and 30-minute film produced, written, and directed by Gene Eustache is about the aging young of the left bank who live in an atmosphere of apocalyptic narcissism. It's about the disaffection of those who are stranded in a confusion of personal freedom and social hopelessness. Eustache methods resembles the static randomness of the Warhol Morrissey pictures, but the randomness here is not a matter of indifference. It is a conscious goal. He tries to push viewers beyond patience to rub our noses in his view of reality. Implicitly, he's saying, "I'm going to show you more of the tormented soul than anybody has ever shown you before." Yeah, whatever. Yeah, great. That reminded me. Oh, fuck. I'm losing all my thoughts. I forgot. I had another thought.
I'll just say that at a certain point, I stopped taking notes. It might be because of the length, but it might be because I was just, the movie was picking up and I was getting into it. So, I also found the fake kissing really weird. I don't know if anyone, like anytime someone kissed, it just really put me out of it.
Oh, that's fake what she kissing? Says, something that I wish I'd gotten more out of this. Cause I do think that there's references to Paris in 1968 and all of the riots and everything. Yep. Like so I think from a historical perspective, it is fascinating to me to see young people, you know, 4 years out from that, like facing the hangover of Prague Spring and 1968 in Europe, that I think is interesting.
Well, it reminds me of our conversation of In the Realm of the Senses, where I think both me and Peter were saying we wish there was like something else there, some other thing to like grab onto, you know, to have more of that war context or whatever. And maybe Yeah. Maybe this would have, I mean, this would have been a pretty different movie if that would, they would have leaned in more of that, but
yeah, more.
Well, I feel like we haven't hit that sweet spot, right? We either had In the Realm of the Senses, like all sex all the time until death. And now it's like all talking, intimacy, relationship, talky, talky, talky. I want to know when we will hit that like nice sweet spot.
We did. It's called The Shout.
There was nothing sexual or intimate about that movie.
John Hurt gets cucked like a lot, a lot in that movie.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
Oh, that was such a good movie. Oh, with his wife on her knees. Oh, man, what a good movie.
My goodness. Sorry, did anybody think of... No, it's okay. Did anybody think of... what was I going to say? Did anybody think of Bernardo Bertolucci's The Dreamers while watching this movie? Y'all seen that one?
Haven't seen it.
That's Michael Pitt and Ava Green. And it is a movie about three young people during the 68, during May 68 in Paris. Ava Green and the guy who is not Michael Pitt are brother and sister, and also in like an incestuous relationship. And Michael Pitt is their third that they bring into this weird. And it's about like they just kind of like chill in a bedroom that gets like it's kind of a combination of this movie and In the Realm of the Senses, actually, because it's about three people who just like kind of like devour each other in a bedroom while there's chaos going on outside. Also a movie about how these kinds of relationships are fraught with disaster. I don't think that they're especially like connected, but I mean, if you're looking for a movie that engages a little bit more with that sort of like spirit of 68 stuff, The Dreamers, by Bernardo Bertolucci is a pretty solid one. Yeah. I feel weird recommending that movie because I'm not sure if I loved it or what. But anyways.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
I've seen this. I have seen that.
Oh, keep going. Yeah, oh, yeah. What did you think of The Dreamers, Corey?
I don't remember. It's been a very long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably
it's
been
also about
15,
film. They talk about film
years.
A lot.
Yeah.
Film.
Yeah, once I saw the poster, I'm like, oh yeah, I've seen that.
Any other thoughts of The Mother and the Whore?
Not for me.
Every day. That's why I'm still going to therapy.
Well, then, I guess we're here to roll our ratings for this week's movie. And we do things a little bit differently, as we say every week. We rate things on a 1 to 20 scale in honor of the glorious D20 die of tabletop role-playing games and Dungeons & Dragons. I do not have any comparisons with Dungeons and Dragons characters or monsters or classes or anything. Oh, thank you, Wizard, please, by all means.
This whole movie is a classic example of the DMPC insert. Like, this is what happens when your Dungeon Master takes over the whole game and makes it about them.
And then, so of course, the new woman also wants to sleep with him.
Hang on, I have to put down my big sword and take
and
off my many black
orgasm
cloaks.
After orgasm.
Yeah. Do you guys have time to talk about magic? Because I know a few things about magic, too. I'm a great swordsman and magician. That's all.
Well, as you can see, we all have opinions on Dungeons & Dragons here. So we will roll for our scores. Okay. And I'm going to go in the same order that I started the show. And we'll start with Peter. What are you rolling for The Mother and the Whore?
Yeah, I came in with an 8 on my mind. And this conversation just cemented that in both ways. I do think a lot of very fond things about a lot around this movie, and maybe in a different environment to watch it with like, you know, less stress on my mind, I would have been able to sit back and fall into it more. But no, 8, and I think that's good, and I feel good about an 8.
Wonderful. And I'm forgetting, I think I went to Wizard next. Wizard, what are you rolling for The Mother and the Whore?
You know, I came in with a 10. True neutral. I'm going to give it a 10.
Okay.
It's fine.
3 hours and 40 minutes later.
Doing the scores they came in with.
Corey, no. Please give us some variety here of some sort.
Yeah, this is so funny because I'm looking back, because you all mentioned Summer Hours, and I'm just looking back at the scores, and you all really liked that movie, and I was way down on the low end of that. This is so much more interesting of a movie than Summer Hours. It really, really is. So I don't know. I thought when I was watching this, this feels like a 12 to me, and I think that's where it's gonna stay. So I'm also gonna cement my score. I think it definitely breaches over the halfway mark for me. I love it.
That you, I really enjoy that this hit you. That makes me really happy.
Yeah,
Angela,
that's great.
What about you? How are you rolling on Le Model and the sex worker?
You know, I didn't even think about what I was going to score this until we started talking about this. Like, I didn't even think about it during the movie because I was so engrossed in what was actually happening in the movie. And that doesn't happen to me often. It's been a long time where I was actually truly along for the ride. And I actually do think cinematically, regardless of what you think about the director or what he's talking about, it's... an unusual capturing of intimacy between people in ways that you don't normally get to see, that I found completely good or bad, compelling and interesting to watch, and made me think about my own intimate relationships. And so to me, that's very valuable and provided a lot of opportunity for self-reflection. And I do think it's poking fun at itself a bit, and it is billed as a black comedy. So I'm giving it a 14.
Cool.
Give me a 14.
Laugh riot.
All right.
Yeah. I don't know that I didn't laugh at it, but I have to tell you, there was some point. Oh, I know. I'm glad we talked about this. At the point where this movie, where Veronique suggests that maybe Alexandra should get fucked in the ass, I hooped and hollered and yelled, "This is the best movie ever." Because it was like turning the tables on him. And I found that, like, every woman thinks about that, like, what, like, the amount of submission it takes to receive someone is something that most men never even consider. And so for the women to propose that in this movie was a type of liberation. And I found that, and actually, wait, it's not the end of the show. It gets another point for that 15.
All right.
It was embarrassing because Chris had friends over to play a new board game called Zone that he got off the Kickstarter after 3 years. And they were all leaving, and I was hooping and hollering. I was like, yes, this is the best movie ever. Yeah. So, yeah, there we go. That was our show for this week in terms of what we had going on for The Mother and the Whore. Perhaps you would have opinions on The Mother of the Whore. You could tell us all about them. You could tell us by emailing us at critclubpodcast@gmail.com or on our socials. Oh, we are on Threads, Instagram, and are we on Blue Sky?
Yeah.
We're on Blue Sky.
We be.
How's that going? Any action on the Blue Sky?
Not a lot.
You know, yeah, I know. It's a different vibe on Blue Sky.
They're starting up. Take things at our own pace on Blue Sky.
Right. And so... now we get to talk about what we'll be watching next week. I don't know. Are we having a live movie selection? Or if we actually made an official pick?
I picked it. And everyone's already giving me shit about it. No, I'm just teasing. We're going to be watching Come and See, the 1985 Soviet anti-war film directed by Elem Klimov. I love a good story behind a film, and this took him 8 years of Soviet censorship to fight through to be able to make. And
why did they censor the movie, Corey?
Because it's pretty graphic, and it's not going to be. It's not going to be an easy watch. So sorry.
It's like, what depressing kind of graphic for Soviet are we Russia. Talking about? Are we talking
it's
like
war.
Sexually graphic?
No. It's about war. It's an anti-war film about the Eastern Front, particularly. So
what a romp.
Yep, a romp. But it's extremely highly well regarded, and a lot of people say it's one of the best films. So,
and at only 2.5 hours, it's a quick watch compared.
I felt bad about that. Sorry, Peter.
No,
I really, we cannot. We
no, there's length
no.
I didn't mind at all. Oh yeah, no, I don't. I'm always on board.
Well, I had complained really about it before, so like for me to end up picking a long ass movie, I felt like an asshole.
The longest, I think.
Yeah, this is a new record. No, I'm happy I saw
it. No one would have expected The Mother and the Whore to be that long, and it shouldn't have been.
Indeed.
Yeah, come and see. All right, we will come and see.
Come and see.
All right, and so that gets us all excited for next week, and so we move on to the final portion of our show, which we call
Oh My Goodness.
What You Watching, where we talk about the things that we are not watching that aren't on the Criterion streaming service and what we watch outside of that. So I'm going to go backwards. Corey, what you watching?
Everyone should watch Baby Reindeer. Has anyone else watched Baby Reindeer?
No.
Does it end well?
Yeah, I watched it.
You watched it? You seem less enthused.
I liked it. Oh. Yeah, I liked it. I liked how it ended. yeah, it wasn't amazing, but I did enjoy it.
Oh, interesting. I totally thought it was amazing. I loved it.
Great.
It's not necessarily an easy watch, but it is, there is like levity and humor and all that stuff in it. But it deals with a lot of heavy stuff with a lot of, you know, abuse and stuff. I don't know. I thought it was really fantastic. So, and
I loved the ending. I thought the ending was, beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like I did like that. Like the ending was, extremely well earned and really beautiful.
But yeah. And the way that, I thought that it segued into what we were talking about before is this is also another like autobiographical thing where this is very much the sort of writer, director, and the guy who stars in it, like his story. I think he does it extremely well. And this is one of the more vulnerable pieces of media that I've watched at least in a while. So yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Good.
Cool.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing. That was a series. I got through that.
Baby Reindeer.
Yeah, Wizard, Baby Reindeer.
What are you watching?
Wizard is still watching Fallout. It's super fun. I have not yet finished Shogun. I have all these like open brackets and loose threads that are TV shows that like, I'll get to it. Work has been very busy and challenging lately, and it's just tricky to sit down and watch something good. I'm also looking forward to picking up Outer Range again. I'm trying to think. Oh, I started reading, or I should say I started listening. I'm just about finished. I started listening to Annihilation, the book, or the audiobook by Jeff Vandermeer.
It's one of Chris's favorites.
The basis for the film Annihilation. It's a good book. I would like to recommend. It is a brisk read. I would love to recommend Annihilation to people. It is a really excellent, weird fiction novel about the uncanny. And relationships and like just high strangeness, you know. I've just been kind of sucked into this book, and I'm looking forward to finishing it, because after I finish it, I'm going to start reading A Canticle for Leibowitz, which is a book that has come up at least twice on this show, and I feel like I'm going to have a better understanding of the apocalypse if I just knuckle down and read it.
You should also read all of the Annihilation books, all of the Southern Reach trilogy.
All Southern Reach stuff? Have you read Annihilation,
well,
Peter? What'd you think?
Well, it's... Hey, you know what? I've got thoughts, and this is a podcast where we have thoughts. I really loved Annihilation until... 2 or 3 years ago when I finally read Roadside Picnic, which I've mentioned multiple times in here. And I realized that Jeff Vandermeer just fucking stole Roadside Picnic. Basically, sort of. I mean, it's a different story, but he stole Roadside Picnic. And also Roadside Picnic is a fucking incredible sci-fi book written by two Russian brothers in the 1970s. It is Annihilation before Annihilation. But I still think I give Annihilation and the Southern Reach trilogy a lot of credit. I think they're very interesting books. If you also like that, I don't know how much you like weird fiction, but in the spring I read did I read the whole trilogy of the first two books the first book is called Light. I don't know if you've heard the Kemahuchi, Jesus fucking Christ, Kefahuchi Tract, Light, colon, a novel. Kefahuchi Tract is the name of the trilogy by Harrison. What's his name? His name is M. John Harrison. They
good
are also
name. Really good author name.
M. John Harrison. They're very like they're very weird fiction. They are also very much directly taking from Roadside Picnic, but unlike Vandermeer, M. John Harrison cites and celebrates the Roadside Picnic lineage.
I see. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I was really taken with those. But yeah, Annihilation's good. You should read the other books. They're very solid.
Interesting. I'll check out the other books. Annihilation. I'm having a good time with it.
I absolutely recommend Roadside Picnic if you ever want to read that. That's fucking great.
Right on. And yeah, that's it. That's what I got this week. It's a bookish week.
Well,
Angela.
Yeah.
What are you watching?
I'm so sorry. I know I was talking a lot, but I have things that I've watched as well.
Oh, that's right.
All right. Yes. Yes. Of course.
That's right. Peter,
sorry.
What you
I'm
watching?
I'm talking too much. God, I'm talking too much.
No.
I've got a really good horror movie recommendation. Really good horror movie recommendation for you, Wizard. I watched a number of them this week, but the one that definitely stood out is Late Night with the Devil. It's a brand new movie.
Oh, I wanted to see this. It looks so good.
Written, directed, and edited by Colin and Cameron Cairns. The whole conceit of it is that there's this fictional late night talk show in the 70s, like a competitor to Johnny Carson. And there's a lost episode that the whole movie's like positing, like we're showing you the last episode that was never aired. And it is great. I think it's a really unique conceit. I think the execution
looks so
is
good.
Fucking solid. I really enjoyed Late Night with the Devil. Really did. I think I would even say the best new horror movie I've seen this year. I may have to think about that, but I think that's true. And also, I would be remiss if I didn't say I'm nearing the end of another watch of one of my five favorite television shows in the entire world of all time, Gilmore Girls.
Oh my gosh, really?
You've
watched that a couple times, haven't you?
Yeah.
This is maybe like my fourth or fifth sort of rewatch. It's been hard recently. I needed to feel some things, so. This is a movie that I cry almost every episode. It is so delicate and touching, and I don't know another drama or show that writes about the sadness and fragility of human relationships in such a soft and affecting way as Gilmore Girls. It's a fucking amazing show.
That got me through some hard times, that show.
It's great.
Aww.
It's worth rewatching. Angela, what else are you watching?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, last week I went to see Inception, and I hate that movie. I hate that movie so much, and not just because Leonardo DiCaprio's big fat face is in it. The whole conceit of it just felt evil to me, and I had to sit through it, and the person I went with, who I care about, it's his favorite movie, and so there was a lot of awkwardness, and it just stressed me out. Completely, because it's like a huge thriller, and it just I avoid thrillers mainly because being a parent is a thrill ride, and so when I'm escaping, that's like doubling my the things I'm trying to escape, and I feel trapped in the movie theater. It's kind of terrible. So we don't need to talk about that anymore.
I don't know what to think about Christopher Nolan anymore, because there are a couple of movies of his that I just absolutely love, and then there's a lot of them that are just a real slog.
What did you think of Tenet, Corey?
I couldn't get through it. I got about halfway through Tenet, and I'm like, I'm doing something else with my time.
It's dumb as shit. I love it.
I should finish it at some point, but yeah.
No, you don't have to. They make a gun called the Algorithm. It's dumb as shit.
I mean, sorry, I liked Memento, but this I just couldn't buy any of this. I wasn't buying what he was selling. Yeah. And I was like, I don't care. You're full of shit. This is stupid.
I think he works best on like a shorter leash, like his smaller films that are still like ridiculous, but just a smaller leash really makes a difference. That's why Prestige is a great movie.
I love The Prestige.
I hate that movie. Oh my God.
It's so
Dark
good.
I love Dark Knight. Even though it's like fashy as fuck, like I still really just love The Dark Knight.
Hmm.
I have not watched a Batman movie since Tim Burton did them the first time, and that was all I needed. Why mess with greatness? Which is hard because many of the people in my life are big Batman fans and think I am clearly wrong. And I will live with it. Yeah.
They are the best movies.
They're the best. But what else did I...
Batman shoots guns in that one, man. It's ridiculous.
Mm.
Anyway.
That's fine. Mm. I also watched professional women's soccer. I saw the Portland cool. Thorns. And,
nice, awesome. Right on.
I'm probably going to buy season tickets because it's one of the most uplifting things I've ever attended. And it once again shows Portland as the jewel it is. I mean, women are badasses. The Thorns beat the Houston, whatever the heck they were, 4-1. And I was hooting and hollering with every goal. I was yelling loudly and it felt great.
Awesome.
So my sports ball is back in the life after I was betrayed by the Oakland A's. Fuck that Fisher guy.
How are you dealing with the Oakland A's moving cities, moving to Albuquerque or wherever?
Whatever.
We don't have to talk about it now. We can get
no,
another podcast.
I'll give it a quick just thing in that because I want Major League Baseball to know that they have lost me forever. That whole process made me feel like someone who was completely disrespected, even though I was paying their bills, and I was a season ticket holder, and I wanted them to stay in Oakland. And I've been a baseball fan since I was a baby. No more. I have traded my green and gold for the green and gold of the Timbers. I am watching Major League Soccer now, and Major League Baseball can fuck right off. Fuck right off.
You done goofed, MLB. You done goofed. You lost a good one.
And so I also watched the Shogun finale, but I'm not going to talk about that. I have opinions, and because I want to hear what Wizard has to say. And that is everything that I have watched in the last week. And that is also
the ending's great. We're trapped by duty. It's
is it?
We're trapped by duty, and the good guy was the bad guy the whole time.
I have one little bit of bonus content here at the end that doesn't fit into anywhere. If you'll indulge me, I just went to the spreadsheet, which you can find in the show notes about all of the scores that we've all done over all the movies that we've watched, and we've watched in the realm of like 70 different films here and rated them. And this number obviously doesn't mean much given the biggest thing, but I just did the averages of what everyone averaged.
Oh boy.
And so I'm curious to what you all think. Who do you think was the overall average lowest scorer? Gave the
Angela.
Movies the lowest scores.
Angela's the only person who has the courage to fail a movie.
Many
Angela does have the most crits. That's true. However, she is not the lowest scorer.
No, I think it's Peter.
No, I think it's Corey.
That's so funny because I did this because I assumed it was me. Because I was like, why do I like this movie? I don't like movies. So then I went like did the average. And yes, it is me. I come in at an 11.7 for my average. And do you want to guess, though, then who is the highest scorer?
Angela.
It has to be me.
But you give the most crits. The crit fails, I mean.
So I'm I'm in the middle of the road.
Oh, that's true.
No. She's tied with Wizard for the most 20s.
Oh, okay. Well, no, it's actually Wizard. Mm-hmm. Wizard comes in at a 14.3 average.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's my average?
You're like 13.5, and Peter is 12 point, actually 13.
Listeners, do middle what you top. Will with this data. It's,
yeah,
it's
be careful.
Beautiful
be
data.
Be careful with it.
Be careful.
Well, listeners, I hope you will be careful next week and join us while we watch something about coming. Corey, what is it?
Come and see. Mm. You know, and I can't say it without hearing Johnny Cash. Like, and so come he rode a white horse. Come and see. And I saw. And he was riding a white horse and Death. It was named Death or whatever, I don't know, whatever the song is.
It's The Man Comes Around.
Man Comes Around. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, come around
for
and
cash
watch.
Cash reference for the month.
Come and see. And email us at critclubpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us what you think. Tell us what we should watch. Tell us you think we're a bunch of bozos. Just tell us.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Don't
maybe
do that.
Not. Don't
no
do
need.
That.
I know.
All right. And that's our show for today. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Angela. Thanks for
au revoir.
Thank you, listeners.
De rien. A tout à l'heure.
Bye-bye.